Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Cold River Mountain Watch. Cold River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour on this, the 31st day of December, 2014. We are live. This program is live. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. This is, in fact, our New Year's Eve program. And let me start off by saying Happy New Year's already to all the listeners who are on the other side of tomorrow. Happy New Year to our buddy Horst. Happy New Year to Steve in China. Happy New Year to John and John and Robert in Australia and Carol Abel and a wide variety of the other Australian contingent. Let me say Happy New Year to our friends like Robert in Japan. Happy New Year. And it'll be a new year here in about 5 hours and 58 minutes. We will go until 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That would be 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Yes, indeed. And the last 2 hours of the program, from 7 onward, 7 to 9, will be a very special Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Front Porch, New Year's Eve edition at The Horn. Just checking in with the boy there for a minute. Sorry for the delay. Nice crowd gathered together, and I'm sure more to come in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. You, of course, are welcome to join in as well. Just go to headonradionetwork.com, click chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and away you'll go. Good evening, Benedict. Good evening, News Ninja Carol Baker. Good evening, Doctor Who. Good evening, Gerald. Good evening, John, and good evening, Kelly. Good evening, Michael, and good evening, Texas T. Good evening to longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, all three mods in the room this evening. Happy New Year, one and all. Of course, as we wind down this year, I will note that we are about, $225 away from finishing the year to the good, as far as my calculations are able to show. So if we can come up with that this evening, even the regular $150 is wonderful beyond expression. Thank you very kindly, Randy and PA, loud and clear on iTunes on my Mac, Bob. I do appreciate it. No, I am not watching football at the moment. I'm doing a radio show, a radio program, Michael. Yes, Texas Betsy, you are the only one who thinks Bob is broadcasting from the inside of a tin can. Yes, you are. We've got rock-solid audio here. It might have something to do with the stream selection. Quality goes down with bandwidth. And so this evening we say farewell to the entirely artificial in the first place, 2014. I guess this is the point in time where I deliver my annual end-of-year remarks on the arbitrariness of years. I mean, human beings had to figure out fairly early on How to mark time for no, well, primarily for the reason, and this occurs, you know, this, it's worthy of discussion and worthy of wondering about, because did hunter-gatherers had to be aware of the seasons, because otherwise, but then they were hunter-gatherers and they were in direct observation of the nature, the seasonal nature of their hunting and gathering. When sedentary agriculture comes along, however, you have to know when to plant and when to harvest. And really the best way to do that is to observe the skies and observe the rising and setting of the sun in particular. And that's, you know, why you wind, that's, you know, we identified as humans, we identified the solstices, winter and summer, the longest day in summer, the shortest day in winter. We identified the two equinoxes, the vernal and the autumnal, and that pretty much defines the year. When, however, we declare a new year to have begun is entirely arbitrary. I guess there's a Muslim New Year, there's certainly a Chinese New Year, there's a Jewish New Year, and the New Year we recognize is one that was imposed by the Roman Catholic Church. This is, you know, prayer meeting Wednesday, so we can talk about that kind of thing. Julius Caesar tried to set the, one of the things that he did during his period as dictator was to try to set the calendar back to rights, because it's dating is imprecise, and the months, if you don't make adjustments periodically, the months will get completely out of sync with the seasons. And one of the things he did was put it back to rights. And then a few years later, a few centuries later, rather, maybe a millennium, I'm not sure. When does Gregory come in and mess with the calendar? We get the calendar as we know it today that starts the new year on January the 1st, which, in my humble opinion, and nobody asked, is a really lousy time to start a new year. I mean, if you want to start it in the dead of winter, start it on, you know, the winter solstice. And have Jesus's birthday 2 days later. But then you'd have to add in another holiday because of that thing we discussed earlier, because you've got to, right, you know, with the snipping and the clipping and the herpes. The Romans started their new year in March because that was the beginning of the planting season, and it was also the beginning of the season in which the Roman Republic could march its citizen soldiery off to war. One would presume that in cultures on the south half, southern half of the planet, something similar would obtain, only in reverse. But now in we've pretty much standardized New Year for the Christian calendar, January 1st. But really, everybody else's, you know what? Everybody has an individual New Year's Day. It's your birthday. Your birthday is New Year's Day for you. So there are millions of, well, there are 365 different New Year's Days divided among how many billions of human beings on this planet? Right. See how it works. Oh, let's see here. More folks wandering into the chat room. Good evening, Bedtime for Bonzo. Good evening, Jan and Jerry. Good evening, Kelly and Labor Man. Welcome aboard, and hopefully even more folks will be wandering by. So I only point all of that out simply because it's a means of keeping a little bit of perspective on this. Of course, for the professional consumers of alcohol out there, this a buddy of mine referred to it as such. This is amateur night. This is the night when people who don't drink go out to bars and sit there and say, I want a kamikaze. And a little bit later they walk up and they say, and I'm going to have a rum and coke now. And a little bit later they walk up and go, what's that Long Island iced tea thing? Give me one of them. And the next thing you know, they're vomiting in the champagne bucket. And stay off the roads tonight. This is a great night for not being a driver. Right? Because it's amateur night. Oh, I don't know. I don't know what we'll do at midnight here. Crack open an ice cold Labatt's that I thought was made in Canada, but turns out to be made in Rochester, New York. Still good. Still cheap. Yay, cheap. Tomorrow's my big day, though, because tomorrow is, well, oh, tomorrow's college football. And tomorrow's also cooked cabbage. You cook cabbage because cabbage is green and money is green, and therefore you bring yourself luck. I about turned the Kroger store upside down 2 hours ago trying to find some damn black-eyed peas. Gotta have black-eyed peas on New Year's Day. Tweren't any dried ones. Weren't any in the canned beans aisle. And finally, couldn't possibly be. And, yeah, I wandered over to the frozen foods, and there were the black-eyed peas over in the frozen foods. So I'll put them on for a slow simmer this evening. I found the last sad, sorry little hunk of hog jowl. Gotta have hog jowl because you begin the new year and bring yourself good fortune by eating high on the hog. No, Texas Betsy. You know a year ahead of time. Shop for peas at least a week early. No, that's no fun. That's entirely too organized for my chaotic existence. As our dear friend Kate on the Front Range has pointed out time and time again, and I'm thinking about having it tattooed on my head. You know, chaos is always self-correcting, and it's self-corrected in the frozen food aisle today. So I got me a bag of rice, I got my hog jowl, I got my black-eyed peas, got some onion, got some celery, and we'll be having our Hoppin' John. I'll season it up a little bit. You know what? Damn it! Should have bought a fresh chili pepper just to give it a little kick. Nothing like bringing the new year in with a nice chili sweat. But so that's all ready to roll. And I think we'll be okay for tomorrow. Lots of football. Well, and of course, you know, my big deal tomorrow evening is at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time when the University of Alabama takes on that gang from Columbus. Roll Tide, y'all. Roll Tide. And I know I just pissed off a whole lot of the Horn family because we got a lot more Ohio listeners than we do Alabama listeners, I can guarantee you. But it's Roll Tide. Hey, over, yeah, I think I'll probably, earlier in the day, I'll probably, I think, be rooting for Oregon. Yeah. Yeah, I wondered if it was true. I saw something earlier, a couple of days ago, a comparison between the schools, Alabama, Ohio State, Florida State, and Oregon. And there was one box that said tuition, and three out of the four schools said in-state one number, out-of-state other number. Oregon just said tuition is, and it was the same, they indicated it was the same in or out-of-state. And that's very enlightened if it is indeed the fact that there in Eugene, they don't hold it against you from not being from Oregon but wanting to go to the university thereof. I thought that was rather nice. Of course, Eugene's a lovely place, I'm told. I've never seen it. A little cultural contribution coming in from Randy in PA. Randy notes that The tradition in Philly is for New Year's is pork cutlets, sauerkraut, mashed potatoes, and gravy, and possibly black-eyed peas. It's kind of, he says, it's kind of colorless, but it's good. Yeah, that'd be good. And once again, hog jowl, pork cutlets, same principle, eating high on the hog. Because to eat high on the hog is to mean that you have not been left with the pig's feet, the trotters, the entrails, that kind of thing. It means you're getting the good stuff. And, of course, hog jowl is higher on the hog than even the belly from which comes bacon. Sauerkraut. Love me some sauerkraut. And that's obviously the German influence, don't you assume? Note coming in from Robert in Australia. Greetings from the world of tomorrow. Here in Sydney, we're already 10 hours into January the 1st, 2015. Still no sign of my flying car, my personal jetpack, or food in pill form. I guess that means there's no helium-filled pants either, huh, Robert? Happy New Year, Robert says to all the Horn family. Yeah, we're having a hard time keeping up with the futuristic traditions of the extremely optimistic 1950s and early 1960s. Randy noting, I'm confused. Doesn't picnic bacon come from high on the hog? I'm not even sure I know what picnic bacon is. I know what a picnic shoulder is, and a shoulder comes from high on the hog. I wonder if picnic bacon is one of those bacons that's not even bacon, like Canadian bacon, which is ham. And then there's what the Italians call pancetta. Yeah. Oh, we got a dandy good crowd going in the Horn chat room this evening. Good evening, Ron. Good evening, MK Bacon. And you, of course, again, I will note, are heartily encouraged and invited to come and participate. Like I said, here in a little bit, we will fire up the Wednesday on the Front Porch New Year's Eve edition. And if you've never participated, you are more than welcome to do so there as well. Simply on Skype, not via email, but on Skype, and Skype is really easy to use, on Skype, send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc. Sparky Dunk, and Sparky will respond and help you into the process, and he's scattering the breadcrumbs now and putting up the bat signal, and here in about 42 minutes or so, we will fire up New Year's Eve Wednesday on the Front Porch. And good evening, Snee. Welcome to the chat room, Snee. Now, where to begin this evening? Well, it is prayer meeting Wednesday, and the little old ladies down, little old blue haired ladies down in the fellowship hall kitchens, they put on the classic New Year's dinner a day early, since everybody'll be home, doing their family their traditional family values on New Year's Day. There was collard greens, mashed potatoes. And there were black-eyed peas, yes, indeed. And the little old blue-haired ladies in the fellowship hall kitchen can work wonders, I tell you, wonders, with those vacuum-sealed-up corned beef hunks. Oh, yeah, and slice it paper thin and serve it with the cooked cabbage. Yummy, just yummy. Banana pudding. For the dessert, and the deacons, well, the little ones didn't get near the dessert again. The deacons did them out of it. See, this is a meritocracy down here in the basement of the Cathedral of Common Sense. The deacons get to the dessert table first, and that inspires the little ones to grow up and maybe become deacons. See how it works? Sure. Well, thank you very kindly, our dear friend Brandon from Brooklyn. sending along New Year's greetings. Happy New Year to you and the entire Kincaid family and the Horn family. Thank you, Brandon. Thank you very much. Let me respond to this real quick. Email. And I suppose I should issue a technical explanation as well. The reason so many of you were having a hard time connecting to the stream is because the stream wasn't running until right before airtime. Four nights ago. I turned in a trouble ticket to our primary internet service provider, telling them that we were having connectivity issues. By Monday morning, it was all the way down and dead. So we are broadcasting this evening on the brutally expensive but incredibly fast cell phone wireless internet that I keep for just such a, it's like Daffy Duck. Fortunately, I keep my feathers numbered for just such an occasion. I keep this stuff on backup, and we use it when we absolutely have to, but my God, is it expensive, and we can't afford to run the rerun stream on it, so I have to shut down the streamer sending everything in between programs. And that's why you weren't able to connect to the stream earlier this evening, right before airtime. Okay? Hopefully that'll be remedied, but I've called for 2 days running, and I get an explanation of, but they found that they figured out that there's a break in the line, but we ain't got nobody provisioned. We ain't made preservations for sending out a truck with a cherry picket or picker or one of them trenching machines or flying saucer or whatever it is them internet people says they have to fix it. We ain't done it. And I said, so if it's not done by this evening, it's a lead pipe cinch. It won't be done on New Year's Day. Well, that's right. So that's kind of where we are on this right now. Irish Dave pointing out, it is intuitively obvious to the most casual observer that what we need is a lunar calendar of 13 months of 4 weeks plus one New Year's Day too also. Every 4 years, another one, because, wait, there's more. Oh, my fagoot, that would be kind of metric, so never mind. Molotov! By the way, the best calendar joke ever is, how do we know the Jewish calendar is accurate since it in dates back 5,000-plus years and the Chinese calendar is only 4,000-plus years and everybody knows the Jews couldn't have lived for 1,000 years without Chinese food. Irish Dave will be here all night. Don't forget to tip your server. Ron and Raleigh with a note, Happy New Year. I used to be a bartender back in the day, Ron says. To that end, I stay home on New Year's Eve. Oh, and remember, Doug and Bob McKenzie used to fry back bacon, eh? Again, another one of those things, I don't know what it is. I suspect it's not even bacon. And Diane pointing out that Betsy is correct, the sound on TuneIn is as if you are broadcasting in a tin can. I'm still enjoying it, and I appreciate you broadcasting a program on New Year's Eve. Well, thank you, Diane in Kansas, Stan. But see, this is what it would sound like if I really was broadcasting from down inside a tin can. I can only imagine that this probably really sounds like crap on TuneIn. Maybe try Stitcher or U-Tunes, depending on what kind of phone one uses. I don't think you can get U-Tunes. Can you get U-Tunes on Android? I don't know. So we'll spend two hours talking about pretty much anything you want to talk about. But I thought I would get us started with a couple of interesting interesting stories of faith from the wide world. Because it's, well, Wednesday. One in particular kind of grabbed me. This particular story of right-wing, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christianity comes to us from the Boy Scouts. Who are a decidedly faithful organization. And unlike last night's lead story about food stamps and the SNAP program, this is a real story. It comes out of the state of New York, proving that these sorts of stories are not limited to the limited in province and scope to the stand states. You know, Alabama stand, Georgia stand, Tennessee stand, Kentucky stand, South Carolina stand, North Carolina stand, Georgia stand, Mississippi stand, etc. You know, the Confederacy. Well, this one comes out of New York. It's the story of Michael Kelsey. The Poughkeepsie Journal has the original account. Michael Kelsey, among other things, is a practicing lawyer. And he is also a former, emphasis, a former assistant Boy Scout master. Well, he's been charged with sexual abuse in the first degree. He's also been charged with forcible touching and two counts of endangering the welfare of a child. The Boy Scouts of America Hudson Valley say that they took immediate action to remove Michael Kelsey after the allegations came to light. What's interesting about this story is that Michael Kelsey is refusing to step down. Now, the Boy Scouts Hudson Valley have said, "You're not a scoutmaster anymore." To which Michael Kelsey has said, "OSMR." Yeah, really. He is a member of the. By the way, do I really need to mention the fact that this guy's a Republican? Of course I don't. Of course he is. Yeah, he's a Republican member of the Dutchess County, of the New York legislature from Dutchess County, New York. And he's charged with sexually abusing two 15-year-old boys. Yeah. The inappropriate felonious touching happened apparently in August during a Boy Scout hiking trip in St. Lawrence County. He was arrested, Mr. Kelsey was, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian that he is, he was arrested on Monday, the 15th day of December. His next court date is the 9th day of February, and he won't step down. No. Now, what's always the most fascinating about this, stories like this, and yeah, fascinating or horrifying or disgusting. I mean, remember, we're talking about the rape or near rape of two 15-year-old boys. Let's have a quick listen to a little something that the Kelce campaign put out last October. Or maybe not. Curiously enough, the Kelce people have pulled the audios, and because you don't need to hear that. Oh well, it's just another day of faith. What else? Well, this. Sometimes I sort of leave stories to sit and ferment and get a little age on them and air dry a little bit until it makes particular sense to bring them along. You know, after the Steve Scalise unfolding scandal of him getting all chatty and friendly with the Klan, well, see, this is not an isolated incident. The Republican Party, the Republicans, you know, the birthers, deathers, tenthers, baggers, booger eaters, birchers, libertarians, all those, they've got a Klan problem. Yes. This particular clip goes back to October as well. And David Barton is, of course, a giant screaming fraud who is such a liar that his own publisher pulled publication of his book because it was full of lies. He just makes stuff up about history and says, well, of course this is true because I say I'm a historian. Right. As usual, David Barton is mad and angrily wrong about, well, in this case, he's making stuff up about, this should be enough to get him up out of their dirt, but he's making more stuff up about the framers of the Constitution, the Founding Fathers. Hockey puck? Yes, hockey puck.
I mean, the Bible says there is nothing new under the sun. Technology changes, human behavior doesn't. As long as there have been people who were pregnant, there were people who didn't want to be pregnant. Abortion's nothing new, and that's why we have in our library this book on abortion from 1808. Abortion, American, first American edition abortion, 1808? Really? Yeah. Do you know the first ban on homosexuals in the military was instituted by George Washington in March of 1778? Do you know the Founding Fathers had extensive writings on the problems with evolution and why creation was right? Do you think evolution came in with Darwin? No. Evolution had all... Everything Darwin argued had been established 500 years B.C. All Darwin did was take all the evolutionary thought that was out there and put it in one book, make it really easy to read. That wasn't original thinking by Darwin. It was there by 500 B.C. That's why the Founding Fathers had huge writings on evolution and creation.
Cite one. One. Just one. 500 B.C. I mean, I got to guess at the citation here. What would it be? De Rerum Natura? Aristotle? Aristotle's not 500 B.C. by a couple of centuries, I don't think. And in point of fact, Jefferson, whatever his other flaws may have been, was a scientist. Ben Franklin was a scientist. He was bosom buddies with Agnes's multi-great-grandfather, who was thrown out of the Quakers because he wouldn't sign on with some of the mystical claptrap that the Quakers insisted on. Yes, you're absolutely right, Carol. It's called making shit up on the fly 101. But doesn't he just remind you of an insurance salesman? In the way he sort of presents that speed-spoken hustle. Well, sure, it was there. It was there. Yeah, they didn't like evolution. I mean, look, the evolution was all put together by 500 B.C. I mean, it was just there. They just didn't like it. Did you see? Fortunately, this is New Year's Eve, and I can get some of this out of my system later in the evening. I'll tell you the truth. I made sure that the swirly straw was rinsed out for this evening. Well, okay, Carol, I was going to go used car salesman, but I was trying to, because Carol says more like a smarmy used car salesman. I was going to go used car salesman, but I was trying to avoid that. I was trying to avoid that analogy. Oh, thank you, Michael. Michael and Madison noting, listening via TuneIn app now. Sounds fine, clear as yesterday or any day. I was a few minutes late to the program, though. Maybe found folks experiencing tin can could try refreshing their stream. Hopefully it has cleared up by now. Holy cow, thank you, Gary. Thank you, labor man. You've just finished off 2014 to the good. Thank you so very much. That's huge. And thank you, Steve, as well. We are done with fundraising for the evening, unless anybody wants to get 2015 off to a roaring start. Okay. What else? Sure, why not? Let's go to Georgia. No, let's go to New York. Let's stay in New York. We were already in New York. Let's stay there. Because this is one of those charming stories of the heroic boys in blue. So, I don't watch that much television. Hardly at all. But I don't... I mean, the clips I've seen, Ellen DeGeneres seems to do an enjoyable program. And she does wacky things and encourages people to do wacky things from time to time, including something which she calls the dance dares. And apparently people are supposed to break out into spontaneous dance and video themselves doing it and send it in, and she features it, and it's really cute. Pregnant women have done the dance dare. People have danced at Golden Gate Bridge. They've danced in front of the JCPenney all over the place. So an individual by the name of who identifies himself as Alexander Bach. And no, that's not B-A-C-H, that's capital B, capital O, capital K. And Alexander Bach was doing his dance dare. And he's just dancing when a member of New York's Finest walks up to him and says, "What's wrong, you bro?" And two more cops join in beside him, and they kind of bump and shove and back Alexander Bach up against a vehicle, and then the cop puts his hand on his chest. And then they turn him around and frisk him for dancing. Let's see if the audio offers any illumination. Not sure. Might. Maybe. Kinda. Here we go. starts off in Grand Central Station. He bills himself as your favorite prankster.
Hey guys,
prankster.
Alexander Buck here, your favorite prankster. All right, so a couple days ago, I saw this.
I challenged the viewers to sneak up behind perfect strangers. You had to dance behind them without them knowing it.
I'm also a huge fan of this guy. So
oh,
I was like,
no.
Ellen, Psy, Ellen, Psy. Boom, Ellen, there, dance, Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Let's do it.
So we begin to see Alexander Bach dancing behind to Gangnam Style, which was a 2014 thing, wasn't it? Or was it 2013? Isn't it over yet? Never mind. And so there's lots of clips of him dancing behind people all over New York. And it goes on for minutes and minutes and minutes and minutes and minutes and minutes. And then this.
What's wrong with you, bro? Huh? What's wrong with you?
No, I'm just dancing. Oh, I'm sorry.
What are you doing behind?
No, I'm dancing.
Are you kidding me? What's wrong with you? What are you dancing in the street for?
You can't get away, bro. What's wrong with you?
Now the turnaround, now the frisk.
Are you fucking kidding me, bro? Are you a fucking asshole?
They continue to berate him. And then you heard that, "Take a walk!" At which point they shove him and throw him to the ground. For misdemeanor dancing? What? I don't know. I don't know. As the entire NYPD turned into the preacher daddy from Footloose? No dancing. Wonder what they would have done to Bugs. Hey, look, I'm dancing. She was the daughter of Rosie O'Grady. What the fuck is wrong with you? What are you, an asshole? No, I'm a rabbit. Merca. Merca. The best country in the world. The greatest country in the world. Long as you're not dancing. Because then, you know, the guys in blue, they'll come up to you and go, "What are you, an asshole? What are you dancing? What's with the dancing? Why are you dancing? There's not any dancing in New York City. You want to dance, you go, yeah, dad, you go to Jersey or something. Go to Brooklyn. There ain't no dancing down here. You want to dance, go to Philly. Maybe they'll put up with your dancing ass." Well, Benedict, you may very well be correct. Benedict pointing out in the chat room. It's called roid rage, Bob. And I think that's not entirely unlikely. Because in the video, if you were to see it, and you can, Free Thought Project has the story. What he does is he comes dancing up alongside a white police van, and there's two cops standing outside, and the driver gets out, and it's the driver who roughs him up from behind. What are you doing, huh? It was a few nights ago on the program when we were informed that there are something like 49,000 members of the New York City Police Department. Oh, dear God, was it that long ago? Tim from L.A. pointing out Gangnam Style came out July 15th, 2012. Man, time flies when you're earworming. But, you know, this is another symptom of coward America. C-O-W-E-R-E-D, America. The cops are afraid. The people are afraid. The people are afraid of the cops. The cops are afraid of the people. And the cops have guns. The cops are particularly afraid of people with skin darker than a grocery bag. Yeah, I know. Now we'll run down to Georgia. Yes, indeed. This story comes from Hotlanta. The Hotlanta police say they've given up. They can't find a suspect. Just can't find him, who is said to have yelled homophobic slurs at a couple of guys, and then on video, somebody caught it, because everybody's got video now. We're all being watched. In this case, it was a good thing, because the bigot was seen on video throwing a gay man into oncoming traffic because he was holding hands with his boyfriend. Victim's boyfriend said, as we were walking up, a car started following slowly behind us. It was a BMW honking its horn. It was just making us uncomfortable, really. Then an individual jumps out of the BMW, yells, F-A-G-G-O-T, not Fagoot. This bigot was for real. Punches the boyfriend in the back of the head and shoves him into the street. Where the man was laying there as cars were approaching. And in just a nick of time, the victim of this hate crime managed to get back to the sidewalk. Now here's the interesting thing. The Atlanta police have given up on the search, despite the fact that the victim's boyfriend was able to record cell phone video that showed both the automobile and, because they have these in Georgia, the license plate. Here's the fun part. Atlanta's finest went and found the car and the driver of the car. And they interviewed the driver of the car. And when they went back to talk to the victim and the victim's significant other, the Hotlanta Police Department explained to the victims that, we went and found the car, and we talked to the driver, and we asked him, who was that jumped out of your car and hollered that word? And hit the feller in the head and throwed him into traffic. Who was that? And the owner of the car, you know what he done told us? Owner of the car told us, I don't know. I don't know who's riding in my car. There's just somebody sitting in my car and we was just driving along. Next thing I know, he's hollering that word and jumping out and throwing somebody in traffic. And then he got back in the car and we drove away. I don't know who he was. Case closed. One witness told the GA voice, I was disappointed that the investigation ended with one conversation, and that's the best they can do. I think they can do better than that. I would encourage them to do better than that. I'm not laying a lot of blame on the police department, but I'm also not giving them any awards. Because, you know, that's how it always works out. I mean, the police stop you and they say, who was in the car with you? And you go, I don't know, I ain't got the faintest idea. And the police just walk away. He says he ain't got the faintest idea. You reckon if this had been a heterosexual couple, if maybe some pretty young blonde thing had been thrown into traffic, you reckon maybe the Hotlanta Police Department would have made a little bit more of an effort to find Miss Scarlett's assailant? Because somehow I do. I know, I'm a cynic, right? Yeah. Oh, Atlanta. Yeah. And, of course, there's some other stuff to go into. I kind of hate, because it's hard to talk about, but damn, you know, I mean, it's real and it's news, and it deserves to be mentioned, because like Mrs. Lohman says in Death of a Salesman, attention must be paid, right? And this story, of course, is about God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christians. So it fits with Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Story's only a couple of days old. It's the story of a 16-year-old transgendered person by the name of Leela Alcorn, who was born Joshua Alcorn. Union Township, Ohio, this past Sunday. Leela Alcorn. Well, Leela Alcorn's dead. She was 16. Before she died, Leela Alcorn left a pretty broad, well-expressed blog post about her life. She said, I feel like a girl trapped in a boy's body, and I felt that way ever since I was 4. I never knew there was a word for that feeling, nor was it possible for a boy to become a girl, so I never told anyone, and I just continued to do traditionally boyish things to try to fit in. When I was 14, she continued, I learned what transgender meant. And cried of happiness. After 10 years of confusion, I finally understood who I was. I immediately told my mom, and she reacted extremely negatively, telling me that it was a phase, that I would never truly be a girl, that God doesn't make mistakes, that I'm wrong. If you're reading this, parents, please don't tell this to your kids. Even if you're Christian or against transgender people, don't ever say that to someone, especially your kid. That won't do anything but make them hate themselves. That's exactly what it did to me. My mom started taking me to a therapist, but would only take me to Christian therapists who were all very biased. So I never actually got the therapy I needed to cure me of my depression. I only got more Christians telling me that I was selfish and wrong and that I should look to God for help. When I was 16, I realized that my parents would never come around and that I would have to wait until I was 18 to start any sort of transitioning treatment, which absolutely broke my heart. The longer you wait, the harder it is to transition. I felt hopeless, that I was just going to look like a man in drag for the rest of my life. On my 16th birthday, when I didn't receive consent from my parents to start transitioning, I cried myself to sleep. I formed a sort of fuck you attitude towards my parents and came out as gay at school, thinking that maybe if I eased into coming out as trans, it would be less of a shock. Although the reaction from my friends was positive, my parents were pissed. They felt like I was attacking their image and that I was an embarrassment to them. They wanted me to be their perfect little straight Christian boy, and that's obviously not what I wanted. So they took me out of public school, took away my laptop and phone, and forbade me getting on any sort of social media, completely isolating me from my friends. This was probably the part of my life when I was the most depressed, and I'm surprised I didn't kill myself. I was completely alone for 5 months. No friends, no support, no love. Just my parents' disappointment and the cruelty of loneliness. After a summer of having almost no friends, plus the weight of having to think about college, save money for moving out, keep my grades up, go to church every week, and feel like shit because everyone there is against everything I live for, I've decided I've had enough, she wrote. I'm never going to transition successfully, even when I move out. I'm never going to be happy with the way I look or sound. I'm never going to have enough friends to satisfy me. I'm never going to have enough love to satisfy me. I'm never going to find a man who loves me. I'm never going to be happy. Either I live the rest of my life as a lonely man who wishes he were a woman, or I live my life as a lonelier woman who hates herself. There's no winning. There's no way out. I'm sad enough already. I don't need my life to get any worse. People say it gets better, but that isn't true in my case. It gets worse each day. I get worse. These are the words of Leela, formerly Joshua Alcorn. She says, that's the gist of it. That's why I feel like killing myself. Sorry if that's not good enough reason for you. It's good enough for me. As for my will, I want 100% of the things that I legally own to be sold and the money, plus my money in the bank, to be given to trans civil rights movements and support groups. I don't give a shit which one. The only way I will rest in peace is if one day transgendered people aren't treated the way I was. They're treated like humans, with valid feelings and human rights. Gender needs to be taught about in schools. The earlier the better. My death needs to mean something. My death needs to be counted in the number of transgendered people who commit suicide this year. I want someone to look at that number and say, that's fucked up, and fix it. Fix society, please. Goodbye, Leela. And then interlineated struck out Josh Alcorn. After writing that lengthy post, she walked out in front of a moving tractor-trailer truck. So how about it, Mrs. Alcorn, Mama? Did God make a mistake? Was it the devil? Satan? Or was it you? And hubby, Daddy? That's the one. That's the line that got me. That's the line that made it in, made this a prayer meeting Wednesday story, because that's what fundies say about people who come out as gay or come out as trans, or queer, or queer questioning, or lesbian, or bisexual, whatever. They like to say to them because the whole of the evangelical right wing fundamentalist movement is nothing but a series of catchphrases and nostrums and cliches. God made Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. That's one. Love the sinner, hate the sin. That's another one. God doesn't make mistakes. That's perhaps the most pernicious one. Because it would have been so easy if there had been anyone to reach out to these awful, awful parents. If you believe in that sort of thing, no, God doesn't make mistakes. Lila Alcorn was not a mistake. She was, if you believe in the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, a loving part of his creation. Not a sparrow falls to the ground, but that God is aware of it. And so too is God aware, if you believe in him, when little 16-year-old transgendered girls deliberately walk out in front of tractor trailers. And of course she was Christian counseled. And of course she died a minor, so her parents will be the administrators of her estate, and there will be no one there to file suit in the name of Lila Alcorn against the malpracticing Christian counselors who drove her to her death as if they had had a gun to the back of her head. Hell, even not even being, so she couldn't transition until she was 18. If somebody could have been there to say, it's all right, the difference between 16 and 18 is not that profound, you'll be okay, she might be alive. Obviously, she was literate, she was expressive, she was smart. And she's just another notch in Christianity's gun. And this is tragic and infuriating. Chris Seelbach is a member of the Cincinnati City Council, and he's the first openly gay politician ever elected to that body. Chris Seelbach said, the truth is, it is still extremely difficult to be a transgendered young person in this country. We have to do better. By reading her letter, Lila makes it clear she wants her death to in some way help trans civil rights movements. Please, Chris Seelbach says, join me in making a donation investment in our trans kids right now to Trans Ohio. Why? Why is Christianity so doggedly determined to oppose the happiness of children? So, like I said before, oh, hell, let's do one more, and then we'll go to the front porch group. How about the Duggars? Yeah. The goddess of irony never sleeps. Turns out those God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christians, the Duggar family, the fundamentalists, the evangelicals that they are, they don't like them no gay, right? Yeah, well, it turns out they got a little problem. Mrs. Duggar Mrs. Duggar, who went tooth and toenail after the equality ordinance in Fayetteville, Arkansas, a couple of weeks ago. She's got a lesbian sister. Her older sister, Evelyn Rourke, is a lesbian, and she's in a committed relationship. One of the Duggar tribe, Josh Duggar, has become policy director at the Family Research Council. You know, the Family Research Council, the organization that started with a mailing list it bought from Klansman David Duke. The Family Research Council that's run by none other than Tony Norman? Yes, Mother Bates. Perkins. Yeah, Josh Duggar says that that lesbian life is it's a sad, lonely lifestyle. And one of the cruelest jokes the devil's ever played is to have that lifestyle described as gay. We still love everyone as Christ commands. We still have compassion. We still have those kinds of feelings, but we also have our convictions. We have our beliefs. And, of course, beliefs, in other words, bigotries, prejudices, take precedence over compassion. You know, the compassion that Christ commands. Yeah, no kidding. In the past, they described Andy Rourke. I have an aunt who has chosen to live that life, and I love my aunt. I think she's an amazing person. She believes that marriage is between one man and one woman. Chosen to live that life. Because, you know, Josh Duggar woke up one morning and said, you know what, I'm going to be straight today. He's chosen to live that life. Yeah. Right. So we've gone a little past the first hour of the program. We'll get the we'll get the Friday on the Front Porch gang together in fairly short order. Let's take a break, though. And remember, if you want to participate in the Front Porch Gang, you can either join up with the Horn Malloy Skype chat group by sending a contact request to Sparky Dunk, or you can dial in on the Horn Gizmo line, 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is the Horn. Wait a minute.
concentration. She broke up his home. She took him to the cleaners and now she's gone.
Wednesday, New Year's Eve prayer meeting Wednesday on the front porch. This is the horn, and let's jump over to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Hey, gang.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
What's happening? Let's see, who all we got? We got Gerald, we got Barbie, we got Sparky, we got Tim, we got Betsy, we got Carol Baker, and we got Michael.
Hey,
great crowds.
Soon to have the angry Indian, I hope.
Cool.
And soon to have Erin Nanasi.
Oh, she figured it out?
She's coming. I texted her.
Okay. Oh, guess what?
What?
Scott in Sweden wants in.
Oh, cool. Hi, Scott.
Hi.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's happening, Betsy?
Not a whole lot. Got to see your favorite, can you believe it? She's 23-year-old.
Oh, my
former.
God.
I know.
And how is the young legal scholar?
Cassie's doing well. She is, seems to be doing well. So, spent an afternoon with her, actually two afternoons.
Right.
When I was up north.
And is she liking law school a little better?
No, not really.
Oh, okay.
But she's got her final goal in mind, so she's tolerating it.
Yeah, sometimes that's... Well, law school isn't necessarily a load of fun. It's a lot of hard and stressful work.
Yeah. Well, I don't think the work is bothering her, but, you know, she's smarter than the rest of us, so.
Well, of course. Absolutely. Aren't all 23-year-olds?
Yeah, but she actually might be smarter than the rest of us.
Hey, Scott in Sweden's with us. Hey, Scott.
Hi, can I be heard?
You can be heard. Do you wish to be heard?
Well, I'm having a little volume problem here.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know if that was parliamentary or technical. I didn't know if I was going to have to bang a gavel and have the chair recognize you or anything. Yeah.
I'm still trying to figure out how to get only one of you and not two of you.
Oh, dear. So you're all echoey over because you're not
echoing. No, I think I got it. I got it.
Good deal. Well, welcome aboard, and it's already Happy New Year in Sweden, is it not?
Oh, yeah. The thundering fireworks have all abated now, and it's getting quiet again.
Oh, the Swedes are back to behaving themselves?
Yeah, they have their annual splurge.
Very nice. Let's see. The Angry Indian is with us. Good evening, Angry.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Gotcha.
Okay, yeah. Hey, how you doing? Happy New Year and all that. Because it is New Year in some parts of the bubble right now.
Yeah, in the bubble. Right. Yeah, happy arbitrary New Year.
So, is there a subject for this evening, or what? I just walked in.
Oh, no, this is mostly just sort of a New Year's Eve hangout.
Okay, so, what happens on Friday? You know, I mean, this is what you do on Friday, right?
Yeah,
you
know, so we'll
usually like...
Yeah, we'll do it again on Friday, but maybe a little, I don't know, what happens, happens. I mean, this is all ad hoc, ad lib, al fresco, and...
Okay, well, then I'll throw this out. This is the second young person that I can think of in recent memory that has committed suicide in an effort to get people to pay attention to what is happening in the world. This was the first one was a young woman in India, South Asian, and she said that she could not see with all of the drone attacks and the terrorism and the U.S. imperialism and AFRICOM and everything that was happening, because we forget in the United States that young people outside of the lower 48, they're actually politically cognizant. They read newspapers. They listen to adults when they speak. And they are much more aware politically of what's happening. And this young woman said that she could not see the world getting any better. So she killed herself. She topped herself. And now you're reading off, and I had just read this a couple of hours ago. We have a transgendered youth who, you know, seemingly, unlike a lot of other young people, was pretty clear, it seems, on, you know, where her personality lied. You know, we're not talking about sexual orientation. We're talking about her gender identity,
sure. Yeah.
And, folks get really confused about that, and it's very confusing for a lot of young people, because I personally have known people that have bounced between genders because they were very confused. And, you know, we have a lot of it being pushed right now in mainstream media, and that will pass, and they will have to live with themselves. And you have a lot of folks that are getting a lot of backroom surgery, and there's a lot of mistakes happening. There's a lot of mistakes walking around, and they have to live with this. Because they had no money to begin with. They didn't have therapy. They couldn't afford these things. So
well,
they got jacked up.
Yeah, and there's a truth also buried in there, because she specifically references in her farewell blog post It Gets Better, which of course is a national campaign of extreme urgency and goodwill to try to help gay and trans youth get past the ugly, you know, because adolescence is hard enough. Can you imagine being adolescent and trans, or adolescent and gay, or adolescent and anything but normative in this culture? And so that's what
I've witnessed it.
That's what It Gets Better is all about. But the thing is, it doesn't get better if you are a prisoner in your own home, which is what her good, fine, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian parents made her.
Well, this is what I wanted to point out, because, like I said, we had this young woman in India who did herself in because she was so, you know, distraught that she could not see the world getting any better. That, you know, we have another one who made, you know, really a political move. This was a political move. you know, someone who actually felt that by doing this, they could do, you know, first remove some of their own personal, you know, pain. And for those of you who do not understand this, you know, a lot of us have to be told. I know I had to learn this. Psychological pain for many people manifests physically. And when things just get so bad, when you can't see a way out, for a lot of folks, this is the way that they deal with it. But in this case, this person went through this process hoping that she would be of service to someone else other than herself. And she laid this out as clear as I've ever goddamn heard anything like this. And what it says in 2014, on the cusp of 2015, to me, is that we've learned absolutely fucking nothing. And then we know we have this, you know, this form of Christianity that Americans like to call Christianity, right? Evangelicanism, that pushes this. And then we have a pope who's actually stood up and said, hey, this type of bullshit has nothing to do with Christ, has nothing to do with the liturgy, has nothing to do with what the church is actually supposed to be about. This is what he was referencing in terms of the Alzheimer's. And if we can talk about anything, you know, as adults, why don't we talk about the fact that we're looking at 2015 and we have young people in this country that are opting on suicide as their only way of first dealing with their own particular personal tragedies. And trying to wake the rest of us up that there are people out here that are suffering. You know, I'm disgusted that something like this could happen. In my country, I live here most of the time. In my country, to where young folks feel like this is the only goddamn way that they can deal with a situation, is either to hurt somebody or to hurt themselves. And in this case, I can't think of any goddamn, indictment of what this society is about, you know, than to read a letter like this from someone who then decides to take their own life. I mean, how callous are we that these types of things are happening? And if there's anything that can be discussed, I mean, we can go from there. Because this really bothers me that young people are saying it's hopeless. It's completely goddamn hopeless. It's completely hopeless. I have no future. There is no future for anybody. I don't want to be here to watch this stuff collapse. I'm gone.
I guess one of the things that I would say, Angry, is this. That in point of fact, there, I don't know, Ohioans can probably tell me better. But there were resources available to her. But they were kept hidden from her. She was, you know, imagine being 14 years, because she describes it, says, you know, when I was 14, I found out there was a word for how I am. And it made her happy. And she saw a future for herself. It's only after the clamp, and then she walks innocently into her parents and says, well, this is what I am. And they had a Jesus frenzy.
So I came from a city where, you know, at the time anyway, there was no gay groups, there was no P flag, there was no nothing. You know, a lot of the gay men that I grew up with, they had to figure things out for themselves. I knew they were gay because they told me, yeah, you know, I feel like this. And for whatever reason, you know, a lot of folks have come up to me and said, look, man, you know, I got this going through my mind because I don't really judge. And I'm an outsider. You dig what I'm saying? You know, so it's like, you know, folks would tell me these things, and I had a gay cousin that I'm going to say here. He was murdered because he was gay. You know, we still really don't know the circumstances behind that. We've never as family been able to deal with it because nobody wanted to talk about it. You know, oh yeah, well, we really miss him. It was a shame that happened. You know, what happened? And, you know, nobody really wanted to talk about it. So here we are, 2014, looking at 2015. And we're not even talking about homosexuality, right? We're really talking about gender, which is confusing in and of itself. We have men that are walking around who are, you know, for all accounts and purposes, identify as heterosexual in terms of their sexual orientation. They see themselves as males in the physical sense, in the spiritual sense, but then they're telling everybody that they're lost. And then we had a film that was based on, I believe, a book, Fight Club, that was trying to address this type of thing. And then what ended up happening, Bob? Fight Clubs popped up, right? You know, part of it had to do...
Oh, I know that for a fact because, you know, I had a son who had wound up in Fight Club in his own in this little hillbilly high school we go to. We had available to us here. So
you know, there's a lot of questions here. You know, somebody jump in on this. I would like to hear women from this, especially women who are raising sons. Men who are raising daughters. You know, when it comes to gender and these questions and what is expected of you and how you're supposed to fit into these particular class aspects and then these gender aspects. And then you have people who are obviously in between. And they've always been here. In Native American tradition, we call them two-spirited so that people outside of our cultures have an understanding of what it is that we're talking about. You know, we can recognize anywhere from 2 to 8 different genders. And when the colonialists came through, Balboa, for example, he took these two-spirited people. He took all the people we would now call transgendered and gay, homosexual, what have you, lesbian, threw them into a circle and set dogs upon them who murdered them, who killed them, ate them alive. You know, because he said that God, the church, the Bible was against this. And that was what became, you know, Panama, South America, whatever the hell, Bolivia. You know, this stems from something. None of this comes out of a vacuum. But, you know, with all of this talk, you know, people are really pushing Orange is the New Black, which I think is fucked up because you're glorifying prison culture. I mean, I remember Prisoner Cell Block H, you know, for those of you, because I know that it was played here in the States, which was about a women's prison environment. But, you know, now this is okay. You know, we're justifying SWAT teams through popular media. We're justifying prisons and prison culture through popular media, movies. So then you have transgenders, you know, transgender people, I should say, who get, you know, pulled in with this. And we have a character on Orange is the New Black who's very attractive, who, as many can say, you know, at least from, you know, my age group anyway, someone who can pass. And, you know, we're talking about it. And there's a lot of discussion about it. And it's popping up in films. And RuPaul has a very popular show, Drag Race, is a competition show. So, you know, all of this has become mainstream. But at the same time, there's no real cognitive understanding amongst...
It has been mainstreamed vis-a-vis the various forms of for-profit media. Angry, but I can listen. Let me just make something abundantly clear. If some trans girl comes out up here at Hillbilly Hell High School, she'll be lucky to make it to the end of the week alive. All right. It's great to put it on TV, but that's not necessarily a reflection of reality.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. Because when I say that I witnessed it, is that I knew young men when I went to school, you know, who were part of my social circle, were like, why are they always kicking you in the ass, man? And they're like, well, because, you know, they think I'm a girl. They say I talk like a girl. And we as a group, you know, as the friends would say, well, you are kind of girlish, but that's no reason to slap you, you know.
And that betrays a larger universe of problems to be addressed. I mean, just the fatten for fatten's sake is a problem. Betsy, you have something to offer.
Well, I'm not sure what I have to offer, but I'll jump in. Hey, Angry. So I live, teach, and raised a kid in Austin, Texas, and have really never found this to be a majorly big deal. I've had kids at the high school. I've got a seventh grader now who is, I don't know if he's transgender. He's certainly... I'm not sure. I don't know that he knows that the student I have now even knows, you know, has come out publicly with an identity, but it's for sure not heterosexual male, and it's absolutely okay with everyone. Like, you know, the fact that he can't stay in his seat is a much bigger deal to both kids and adults than what his sexual identity is.
Well, because I don't think, you know, young people, really, children, really give a damn. You know, in the cases that I'm talking about, you know, I'm going back a long time ago, you know, in schoolyard days, you know, neighborhood days. And, you know, the ones that were running around calling people faggots and punching people in the chest, like the one that beat me up for many years, I found out later on that he was the town bike. You know, I mean, he was a bottom. He was all over the place. He was not able to deal with his own homosexuality. And he picked on me and two other, you know, young fellas, you know, started calling us faggots. And, you know, he was a big kid. But it turned out that he was dealing with this. And when I think about the schoolyard days, you know, a lot of those kids that were running around doing that, their parents were ultra-Christian, ultra-conservative. And this is what they grew up with in the home. But at the same time, that doesn't answer everything because my father said faggot, and we used to argue about that, you know, which is really weird because he wouldn't allow me to say whitey, you know, he wouldn't allow me to say cracker, but he would say faggot all the time, and I told him that that was a contradiction, but he was like, God says.
Oh, actually, I do have something to say. I just remembered as you were telling that story that when my son was 16, a friend of his came in from out of town who used to live here, lived in the apartments right behind us. And on a Saturday afternoon, we went, we're observant Jews. And on a Saturday afternoon, walking home from someone's house after Shabbat lunch, I think I was walking ahead or behind the boys. And one of the kids that they knew, came out onto the street and started calling them faggot, which I did not hear about. They didn't say a word to me until later that night when they went out at 11 o'clock at night and got a dozen eggs and egged the kid's house, and the kid's mother contacted me, and it was this whole big to-do. And I had a couple of really serious heart-to-heart talks with the boys, one of which was, you can't be egging people's house. They could shoot you. You know, one of which was, they don't own that house. They rent. You're not even hurting their property. You're just causing damage. But the third one was, is that really the best thing you could come up with to deal with the fact that this other boy is calling you guys faggot? Like, why can't you either say, it's no big deal, or I don't care, or who are you to question our sexuality, or, yo, dude, I've had more girlfriends than you, or whatever. Like, why is the first thing that you feel like you want to do is to wait until midnight and throw eggs at their house?
Well, I know, like Angry, I was subjected to that stuff. And I was subjected to it because I had the best grades in the class. And it was difficult to beat me up because I wouldn't fight. And there's no fun in that. And, you know, play baseball, football, do all the boy stuff. Yeah, sure. But I was a threat by virtue, and you know, we're talking about sixth grade. That's when most of this stuff starts, with the onset of adolescence, the onset of puberty. And it was used as, some of the words that would ordinarily be used in a place like Alabama were out for me because, you know, I'm pretty obviously pink. So the next best thing was a sexual smear. And the thing is, most of the boys who were using it at the time did not even know its meaning.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
They don't.
Exactly. They don't. Hey, I want to welcome a newcomer to the group. Aaron is with us this evening. Good evening, Aaron.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm freezing my ass off. How are you?
Well, I saw that in your posts earlier today, and something about drawing straws to go to the mailbox. Who lost?
There was arm wrestling. There was arm wrestling and drinking. No, it's like -2 here, and there's a wind. That's just bullshit. It's just no.
Yeah, it was pretty cold. I mean, okay, so it wasn't minus two or anything. But yeah, there was one of those nasty ass evil winds blowing here. And what we have here in the hills, Aaron, and the same thing obtains when you go further south. It can be 36 degrees, but have a vicious wind blowing, and you'll swear. And because I've had people from up there do so, I would rather be back in 10 below and no wind. That's our reality. Well, I wanted to specifically welcome you to the group and the free for all and the interchange of ideas and the extraordinary ordinary roundtable, and tell you that Farewell Michelle was absolutely delightful.
Oh, thank you so much.
It was put together magnificently, but I don't think you have, and I've said this previously, I don't think you have nearly so much to worry about, because you won't have 1L Michelle to kick around any longer. You've graduated. Now you've got Joni Ernst. Sarah Palin with you've got Sarah Palin with a buzz cut.
With a buzz cut. Yeah. Squeal like a pig. Anyway. I'm really excited to be here because I have a sort of an old new job today. I went back to Forward Progressives, and I have a couple of pieces up there. And it's interesting because I heard Leela's story just about broke my heart when I first read it. I have a friend named Gwen who is one of my personal heroes who posted Leela's suicide note just as that on my wall the other night. I just sat there and I just cried. Because I'm a mom, and if that girl had lived with me, I would have loved the stuffing out of her, and she could have told me anything, and we would have had cocoa, and it would have been okay. And I cannot understand the mindset of anyone, but especially a parent. I mean, my God, your job is to take this person, this gift that you're given, and to protect them and keep them safe and love them unconditionally, and you're never supposed to hurt them and you're never supposed to harm them. And to what they did to that girl is just, it's nauseating, and it's all tied into sort of what people think femininity is and what they think masculinity is. And so earlier today, my friend Jason Dye posted a link to something called Man Book.
Oh, dear God.
No, you trust me on this. Just follow me down the garden path, you know, smoke a joint, it's all going to be okay. Okay, so Man Book is...
Wait, there's weed?
It's virtual
here.
Weed.
Here!
I'm already there, guys.
Woo-hoo! All right, this is going to be much simpler for you then, sir. Okay, so here's how it goes. This is from the actual website. Are you tired of the censorship on fascist book? Would you like a place for men to talk where there are no women around? Would you like a place where censorship is not practiced? Would you like your freedom of speech respected? Join Man Book, Facebook for men. Okay, so that's not bad enough, right? Now, the second thing is that he actually threatens to kill women. And I'm not making this up. He threatens to kill women who try to log in. Ladies, we have called the site Man Book for a reason. We do not wish to have women present. We wish this to be a place where men, here we go, and boys down to about the age of 16 can come and discuss the issues on their minds without the censorship of fascist book.
Boys.
I'm not going to read the whole piece, but this is my question.
Okay.
I want to hear an answer to this. What other group really likes teenage boys and prefers women to leave them alone? What other group would love to have a website dedicated to letting 16-year-old boys chat with older men without filters, reporting features, guidelines, or any sort of restrictions?
NAMBLA? That's a search to me.
Who said NAMBLA?
I did. Gerald.
Gosh, you win a pony. Congratulations.
And of course, NAMBLA is the... whipping boy, probably a poor choice of term, for the right wing. You know, oh God, yeah, them liberals. You know, next thing, because that's always their argument with regard to marriage equality. Next thing you know, NAMBLA will be wanting to marry 2-year-old little boys. But the fact of the matter is, Aaron, in many ways, this Man Book thing is the punchline to a really bad old joke. If it wasn't so hateful. And it goes, yeah. it goes a little something like this. A guy buys himself a ranch out west. And he moves in and he's getting things cleaned up, and pretty soon a truck comes rumbling up to the front and he walks out on the porch, and there's a fella gets out and he's got his cowboy boots on and his jeans and his flannel shirt and his big old hat. And he says, "Howdy, partner. Welcome to the neighborhood." And he says, well hello. Just wanted to let you know we're going to have a little housewarming party for you Saturday night. And want to know, would you be able to come? Well, yeah. Well, it's going to be a good one. We're going to have drinking. You like drinking? Guess I like drinking. We're going to have dancing. You like dancing? Yeah, I guess I like dancing. We're going to have a lot of food. You like good food? I like good food. Going to be sex. You like sex? The fella goes, "Well, I guess I do. Who all's going to be here? Just you and me."
And that, sir, would be Man Book.
That's Man Book.
But wait, you got, this is the best thing. And it's not the best thing because, oh, it's wonderful. It's the best thing because this is so, it's absolutely, if you look up MRA, Men's Rights Activists, in the dictionary, Urban Dictionary, this quote should be right next to it. "We would ask you women to respect our rights as you wish your rights to be respected." Now, here's where it escalates quickly. "If you are unwilling to respect our right to freedom of association, do not expect men to respect your right to life." In other words, he seems really stable. One of the things that I found about him, his name is, it depends on which one you're using. He has two. His name is Joshua with a C, J-O-S-C-H-U-A, Bohm, also known as Peter Nolan. He has a video on one of his websites, and it's an hour and a half long, and I lasted 3 minutes. That's it. I lasted 3 minutes. But in that 3 minutes, he was in court, and he threatened to fine a judge 100 ounces of gold.
Oh, dear God, he's one of those, too. He's a veritable Burger King treasure chest, isn't he?
Well, he's an Australian sovereign citizen. I love when people are just speechless. That's so fun.
Why do we keep getting, and you know, it's not like Robert or John or John or any of our other Carol Abel have to answer, but why do we keep getting? I think there's some sort of weirdo homing signal that just draws the really creepy Australians to the United States. Him, Ken Ham, you know, the dinosaurs are only 4,000 years out.
They came here on, of the douche armada, they came on the douche frigate.
Yeah, they did.
But how did Noah get him on the ark? That must have been a big damn boat.
He used that Play-Doh thing, that dildo.
Oh, dear God. No, not the
extruder. Can I say dildo on the radio?
No, but you can say it on
the internet.
You can say it on the internet. You can
dildo,
say...
Dildo. I'm sorry.
Cha-cha-cha-cha-cha. Yeah, and you can...
I'm just blame Carol.
And you should, because, you know, she's a bad influence. She's a giver that way.
But we love her.
She's my snookums.
We have a new name for Carol now.
Do we?
Charwoman of the Board.
B-O-R-E-D.
I'm not bored.
Not with me around.
But I want to go back to what...
I mean, you fail, but...
I want to go back to what Aaron was saying about... because I was actually kind of charmed by what you said, you know. If she came to me and said, you know, "I'm trans," we'd have cocoa and eat cookies and everything would be okay. That's how it should be in a civilized country. But
well, here, this is who I am.
Gut check. This is not a civilized country.
Oh, I know that. Believe me. Remember in 2011 when Steve Snyder Hill submitted the question to the Republican debate and was booed. That okay, Steve. Remember, mm-hmm. You know, the guy with the arms?
Huh.
Okay. he's a really good friend of mine. He and his husband are both really good friends of mine. But in the aftermath of that, the moments following that, I come from a military family, and I got so mad because it doesn't matter if one person booed him, 4, 100, it doesn't matter. What mattered is that people did, and then every single one of those presidential candidates who wrapped themselves in the flags when they can make money off of it just stood there, and Rick Santorum went off and he was stupid. There's no place for sex in the military. I'm like, really? Because I was in the military. I'm pretty sure you're wrong. And I actually formed a Facebook page called Boo One, You Boo Them All. I had a goal. I was going to get famous authors to send signed books to Steve's unit, and I was pissed. I was so mad. And I am like that, and people have said to me, Aaron, you know, you're straight and you're married. Why do you care so much about the LGBT community? And my response every time is, why don't you?
Yeah.
They are human beings, and they are maligned, attacked, murdered. Transgender people commit suicide at such a high rate that it literally hurts my heart to read the statistics. Because they're just people. Matthew Shepard's mom, I think, has said one of the most beautiful things. She longs for a day when there is no LGBT community, when we're all just one community, when we can all just be together. And given what she has been through and what happened to her son, I think that's an astonishingly empathetic and beautiful sentiment. I haven't written about Leela because I'm so angry at her parents that I don't think that it would come off as me being a very nice person.
And ordinarily you want to manifest some human sympathy here, but I don't think, and I'll go ahead and say this, I don't think her parents could have done more had they shot her toward contributing to her demise.
But see, I just want to say this, though, before things kind of go a little bit off the rails. There's a lot of folks, trouble in the home. You know, I mean, if I sit here and talk enough, you'd be like, oh, man, your parents were completely fucked up, right? Whereas my parents were very respected conservatives. You dig what I'm saying? So,
yes.
You know, this is how she dealt with this. Now, there's a lot of folks, they go to school with black eyes every goddamn day. I mean, my wife worked with a woman that would come to work and her entire face would be black and blue and nobody would say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And when someone did say something, it was always, well, I slipped, I fell. You know, all of us who know that that's a whole lot of bullshit, that this is how she's rationalizing things, explaining things, trying to deal with it. But we see a lot of this acceptable violence in a lot of different areas of our various societies, and every society has it. You know, we're looking at every 28 hours a black man is killed, or an African person is killed by police in this country. So, you know, if we're going to have that and can still go on and get ready to party for 2015 and worry about whether or not Sarah Palin said something stupid this week, or Ann Coulter said something, you know, really dumb, or, you know, Hannity said something, whatever the hell, Limbaugh did the usual, we can get caught up in they're not distractions. I mean, you know, these are real things that impact exactly what we're talking about. But the bottom line is we have to really discuss how things, you know, work in terms of power relations and in terms of gender and in terms of social, dissidents and dissidents in order to really understand what the hell is happening here.
You know what I feel? I feel, my feeling is that this country, culture, society is based upon violence and genocide. I mean, when the European people came here and destroyed the indigenous people and then made slaves of people, this is what this is the inception to me of this country is all about. And it's just continued on in all these various ways. So this is what it's based on. This is the underpinning of our culture is based on. So this is, and now here we are, present day, seeing the manifestation of all that has come after that.
Yeah, I understand that, and I agree with you, and that should be recognized. But one of the problems that I have about a lot of these discussions is that we say that, and that's true. And then, you know, a lot of white people get reactionary because they feel like they're being picked on, which in some cases that is factually true, even though, you know, there's a larger meaning behind it. But the fact is that all countries, all nations, if we're going to deal with the nation state, are results of past conflicts.
Oh, yeah, I agree. But I'm just talking about my, you know, my experience being in this culture. And that's, you know, and seeing the myths and all the stuff that's happened in my reality, living in this culture. And I'm aware it's worldwide.
Well, I'm pointing out, well, it's not so much that it's worldwide. It's just that that's the system. And that, you know, we get limited, especially in the Western world, especially in North America, and especially in the United States, that, well, okay, this particular experience or this particular historical record is what, even when we criticize it, is the litmus test for everyone else. I'm saying this as an indigenous person, in that my particular nation recognized several genders, and we recognize what would be known as, you know, gay people, for lack of a better term today, but at the same time, our neighbors were not. They claim that they never had this sort of thing that was allowable in their culture, even though it had that happened. But they make the same arguments that, you know, well, it didn't exist. You know, the way Ahmadinejad spoke about Iran, which is nonsense, that they were executing publicly men for homosexual activity every couple of weeks. And this wasn't really reported in the West.
Well, I was going to say, I'd like to jump in here because, you know, we've got some international perspective here. I'd like to jump over to Scott, if I could, please. Oh, wait, let me do something else here. Hey, Bill, happy birthday.
Well, thanks, sir. You're so on the money, man. Because I go back to the Citizen Band radio days. That's a long time ago when they brought that out. It was to help people be informed. You ever hear more gibberish in all your life than you heard on the CD, man? And the computer internet stuff. You know, the computer internet stuff is loaded with idiots. The same, I mean, you give an idiot a place to write, he'll say something, you know?
Well, indeed, and I'm sorry I didn't bring you on until just now, Bill. My apologies.
Okay.
I get caught up in things.
No, you listen and learn in this world. I don't care how old you are. The more you listen, the more you may learn.
Well, we're mighty pleased to have you with us this evening, and we will wish you a very happy birthday as you ring it in with the arrival of midnight in the Eastern Standard Time Zone.
Yeah, one second after. I think the doctor held me up so he could get the first baby in the damn city in that year, and I've been late ever since, so that's the way it goes. But I hear some good opinions, and Andrew, you never fail to get the wheels turning in my head, and that's an important thing to do. The older you get, the more you can think, not the less.
Oh, well, indeed.
I appreciate that.
I did want to jump over to Scott and for instance, and you know, Scott, you have to answer for the entire Swedish population. I hope you understand that. It's not too much of a burden to bear. But
can answer in Swedish.
Yeah, okay. and, you know, complete with the funny vowels. Do 16-year-old transgendered children kill themselves in Sweden?
Transgender. I don't really know. My only real experience in all this is I do some proofreading for a couple of psychiatrists who write and publish, and they look at suicides in Swedish youth. And I proofread their papers, and you see that there are similar cases of people, youth, who are just not getting communication, and they end up doing suicide or attempting suicide. But it's not like their parents are radical, right-wing types or anything. It's just, for some reason, communication seems to fail in some families. And they find no support around them, and even then the support from friends are not enough, and they're just not connecting with the adult world in ways. And so it happens, yes. And I think what Angry was saying is so true, that all cultures have a problem. And I think it's because we're all humans. And although we may have different political structures and way of doing things, I wish we had a psychologist or a psychiatrist and a sociologist in the discussion here, because I think the discussion could go into, you know, this, what is it about adolescence, communication, our own psyches, that, and just adapting as we enter the adult world.
And Scott, I'm a psychiatric nurse. I work at the VA here.
And there you go.
And deal with a lot of veterans. There's a big push now to recognize transgender veterans. There's a large population of them, and the VA has a big recognition thing going on now to recognize that. There's a large suicide rate, especially in the Northwest and part of the United States because of the darkness, but also the transgender population is increasingly being noticed and in the VA, in the veterans population. And so there's a lot of training, a lot of attention paid to this in this population.
Mm. And the other thing I was thinking of, I think Betsy was in there about how kids care less about these issues, or they are more accepting than before. And I'm thinking of... you know, this is something about an educational process from where they are learning, are getting their signals. Not formal education, but just acculturation. And they seem to be getting less steered into these real... excuse me, I'm really tired. I'm not making much sense. But these... it's like Angry was saying, there's a culture that had found a way to accept. And it seems like the youth in societies are finding ways to accept. They're not so hung up. So the question is this really an adult problem? Old mores, old religious values, and do we just have to wait out? Can they be, do we have to wait them out until our generation dies off?
And see,
Can they be educated? Resistant to education?
I'm not comfortable waiting for the grave to take care of this problem, Scott, because what you wind up doing is dividing fractions by two. And you never and mathematically you never get to zero that way.
Yeah, it's just, there's also the ideas in like information theory and like critical mass. That there was, as long as there was a substantial number of resistors to new ideas and concepts, that will like rally the others who are resisting. But at some point, when a substantial number of people have all rejected this hatred, that there's a chance that the others will see the futility of it. As much in the same way that finally there's a growing acceptance of gay lifestyle across the world, but my Lord, has that taken a long time.
I'd like to draw a little bit of a connective line, if I could, please, if it exists, between kind of the way Angry said, you know, let's remember there are lots of other children who are in various forms of crisis, and that's the absolute undeniable truth. Well, the phobia and the bigotry and the prejudice and the hate that infected the minds of this child's parents and led to her ultimate demise exists in the same universe with a guy like David Barton, who says, well, evolution had already been written about in 500 B.C., and that's why the Founding Fathers spent so much time refuting it. Well, there's no refutation of it, but it's okay if they believe it. Now, some of us got involved in a little bit of a flame out on my Facebook page earlier today, dealing with an issue in which someone was arguing from the point of view of his beliefs. Not facts, beliefs. And it is these, it's these beliefs. You know, we had, and it's not that long ago, it's 10 years ago, we had an attorney general who believed that calico cats were infected by demonic spirits and who believed that an aluminum statue of Lady Justice with a bare aluminum titty was somehow likely to bring down the power of Satan upon the Department of Justice, and spent $10,000 taxpayer dollars putting a drape on her to keep us safe from the demon booby.
Yes, but yeah, oh, I agree. It's a there's a lot of jaw dropping beliefs in that segment of the population, but those beliefs are very strong, and logic is not necessarily the way to get them to quit believing. In fact, the more facts you can put in front of some people, I think there's been studies to show this, that the more they just double down. So
the question arises, where did they learn the hate? Because the thing is, I think this is stuff that has to be inculcated into the developing brain in order for it to root so deeply that it cannot be dislodged in later life when the full faculties of reason have presumably come online.
Of course. I mean, that seems given. And give me a child, by the time it's five, he's mine. Was that the Catholic Church or the Jesuits who said that?
Yeah.
Yes and no. I mean, there's... If I can step in here for a second, I mean, it's taboo, that a taboo for good reasons, that no one really remembers why they're taboo anymore. You know, and it's, as somebody who's multicultural, you know, there would be places sometimes, and I would deal with certain parts of the family, and I'd have to go into a kosher home. No shellfish. Two refrigerators. Mm-hmm. Separate pots and pans. Right? You know, I have to wear a yarmulke. You know, it's, you know, totally different rules. Or hold my hand over my head. Totally different rules. When you sit and ask a lot of, you know, a lot of front people, just in casual, or orthodox people, in casual conversation, you say, sir, why don't we, you know, eat shellfish? And they'll just look at you and go, because we're not supposed to. And they'll shrug. That's it. We're not supposed to. Yeah, but why? Ask somebody else. Right, well, you know, that's the typical response.
Well, there's a. I just know for some reason there's a large amount of people on the planet that believe in fairy tales, that are afraid of their mortality. They are into religions and cults, and are not that are driven, and this whole hatred of others and fear. There's just so many of them. That I truly believe that, you know, when we're talking about young people and what they go through, even if their parents and friends are supportive, the greater culture around them is not, even if there's more of a quote-unquote acceptance of things, it truly is not, in my estimation. And so I don't have hope that things are going to change, and I agree. Facts does not mean that people are going to take those facts and then change their minds and transform. So I look at it as there's going to be a continuation of the same, maybe even worse. I don't think that things are going to get better, that people are going to have this revelation for the most part, and we're going to all accept each other, and young people are going to grow up and feel comfortable being who they are. I don't honestly feel that way.
But what I'm trying to say, at least I would like us to kind of look at, is that, okay, fine. They, you know, all of these things come from reasons. Now, like I said, you know, most nations, when we deal with the nation state or in claimed territories for people, or what defines a nation, which is usually land, they're born of past conflicts. Even like when Bob and I was talking a couple of shows ago, or a few shows ago, in terms of the Nazis trying to claim that the peoples, the various tribes that were listed in the Asinus Codex, otherwise known as the Germana, and that's the way the Romans defined these tribes in what would be the areas of what we now know as modern Germany, they were not German people. They were not the ancestors of the Germans. I mean, I was trying to explain to a friend last night who is Romanian that I was reading a scientific paper that showed that they're really Celtic in most cases, with a lot of admixture admixture, you know, genetically from Asia. So, you know, what I'm trying to say is that these things may start for reasons that had a legitimate reason in terms of there's a dividing line, those people are over there, we're over here, and if we don't have these divisions, then we're really going to have a hard time trying to feed our own people because there's only so much to go around. That's how a lot of these things get started.
I understand the conception of what, you know, I understand what you're saying, but here we are now, and I'm thinking, wow, all right, this
how do we get to this point? Yeah, but that's what I'm getting to, because then you have tradition. Humans are creatures of habit. So you get into this mold. Well, we're not supposed to like them. It just becomes a meme. And then no one really asks anymore how that got started.
I need to say something here.
Jump in,
please. One of the most secular areas of the world is right here in Scandinavia. Uh-huh. And the religions died off fairly well with economic security. And I think one of the reasons these religions, especially in America, is strong and resurgent is because the economy is so bad and people are uncertain and they're turning to religion in their uncertainties and their anxieties. So at one point, Sweden was a religious country, Denmark and Norway. There are little pockets of the little Bible belts, but they're not very strong by American standards. So, these secularism can grow, but it requires some sort of economic security. And I was in Uzbekistan, of all dictator states, earlier this autumn. And when the Russians came in, that was the step up for Uzbekistan. It was so poor. And it went from a Muslim state. Now only, there's a very few people who are religious at all. That's a very secular state. They accepted the Soviet secularization because the Soviets, to them, brought a much better lifestyle. So I think the role of economics and people just don't get all upset and weirded and wired out if they feel good about their family income.
Well, I didn't mean to cut you off, but in 1930s Germany, they were still paying a lot of reparations for World War One, and they started blaming anybody who was in Germany. I mean, I'm talking about average people. You know, Hitler didn't come out of a vacuum. He was able to do what he did by popular, you know, well, at least for the most point, by populist demand. Because when things got bad, Germans started doing what they normally did. They started blaming outsiders. The same thing that happens in Canada. The same thing that happens in France. The Pujadists, there's still some of them around. When things go bad, they blame Algerians. But there's no Algerians in this province. Oh, but they're there. And then they're friends to Jews. But there's no Jews here. Oh, my friend, you don't see them because they're behind somebody else.
Ooh,
they're behind
the secret
traitorous
ones.
Frenchmen. They're the secret ones. They're behind the traitorous Frenchmen. They're in the black community.
Mormons.
Oh, man.
They're the Mormons. That's what they are, angry. They're the Mormons.
No.
I'm being facetious.
I can't really trust you. What do you mean I can't trust you?
You know what, angry? Where do we go from here? We have all this information that we're talking
hang
about.
Hang on. Alex, hang on. I want to make sure that we get to hear from everybody who's here. So that the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable is indeed extraordinary and indeed ordinary and indeed round. Haley, you've joined in. Welcome to the group.
Well, thank you, everyone. And I'd like to, first of all, wish everybody a good start to next year. And for those listening in time zones, it's already 2015. That it's a good next, it is a good 2015. With that, we have a whole lot of work to do, so to speak.
On a whole lot of fronts. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, I will be shallow for about 8 seconds, Haley, and say, how about them hogs? And,
Bob, I haven't seen the game yet.
Oh no, Scott!
Spoiler alert!
No, that okay, so it wasn't a spoiler. No, they put in a really good effort. That's all I'm saying. It's been a tough year for the Hogs.
Yeah, I mean,
Scott's in Sweden. Scott hasn't watched it yet. It's TiVo'd. Don't.
Good night, everybody. It's 2:10 here, and I'm falling asleep.
Good night, Scott.
So I think I'm just going to leave, and then none of this would be a problem. You guys can bowl game out and have fun.
Oh no, I was only being shallow for about 8 seconds, and I will try to say absolutely nothing on Friday, Scott, about what goes on tomorrow night.
Hey, Scott, thanks for coming in after you said you were.
Yeah, and I'm not even going to listen until Monday, Bob. I'll just...
Okay. Okay. Sounds good. Sounds good. Thank you, Scott.
Anyways, happy
New Year.
Anyway, night, Scott.
Night, Scott.
Gut nitor.
Gut nitor.
Gut nitor. Happy New Year.
Yep, that was it.
I'm Australia. Australia to Sweden. That's a long-distance connection right there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yes, Haley.
I do want to add on I've been listening to the conversation all evening and been getting, just got through eating supper a while ago, and I've been kind of getting myself ready for doing something else. I'm not going anywhere tonight. I'm staying home because all the wannabe drunks are out on the roads.
Amateur night, yeah.
Amateur night. It's amateur night. Plus,
yep.
We have a new sheriff coming in at midnight. He's been elected, so I hear he's going to be cracking down on a lot of folks. But on the note, you were discussing Lila Alcorn a while ago.
Yes.
I mean, I read about that yesterday, and I was nearly crying about it because it hits really close to home with me. Not in the same way, but in different ways that people who are transgender and gender variant or gay or even just kind of out of the quote unquote cultural norm have to deal with negative peer pressure and also blowback from parents. And often these are well-meaning parents that think they know what's best, but they don't. And in this case of Lila, her parents' religion was more important to her parents than their child
than
was.
The life of their child.
Absolutely.
And I think, Haley, if I may raise this, what is desperately called for, because there are more cases like this than most people know, what is desperately called for in this is somewhere that a child like this can go and be safe. Because, for instance, lots of trans kids are kicked out of their homes by their good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, evangelical, gundamentalist parents. And they need somewhere they can go. But in a state like this, if they go into the foster care system, they'll be dumped into the tender mercies of some church-driven, faith-based foster care program, which will be no better.
Which may be even worse than what they came out of. There are, and it's that way here in Arkansas. They're trying to get foster parents or having trouble getting foster parents. And oftentimes, a lot of these religious types sign up to be foster parents, and they get so much per child through the system, and they just run through them like a machine. And it just breaks my heart.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Well, I want to point out really brief that I can't remember the study, and it was some time ago, and I was told that it's much worse now, that at some point, at least on the West Coast, 60% of the young people who were homeless were possibly gay, transgender, what have you, and their parents just told them, I'm not going to raise you, I don't want you in my house, I don't want you around me, you're not mine, that's it. And that's how a lot of these people ended up out there, because they could deal with drug use. They could deal with criminal behavior. They could deal with a violent child, but they could not deal with someone who was what they understood as being gay. Just, we're not going to tolerate it, could not deal with the embarrassment, and put them out on the street. And I think that's something that needs to be recognized, because that's how a lot of these young people end up in the in prostitution, in human trafficking.
Absolutely, and that was my larger point, Angry, is that we need systems in place in all of the several states where there are foster care options for non-normative children. You know,
but then the question becomes, what is non-normative? And then that
we can start with trans kids and gay kids. And work our way out from there, because those are the ones who are probably most at risk. I mean, can you imagine being a gay or a trans kid kicked out of your house and you wind up in some foster care program, and the next thing you know you're sitting in Marcus goddamn Bachman's office being de-gayed?
Well, I can tell you worse, because this happened to someone that I actually know who sat and talked to me about it. We grew up together. And when he had finally come out and told his family what was up, he wasn't transgender. But he just told them, you know, this is what was up with me, because this is the way he explained it to me. I'm seeing it in the news. There's a whole lot of white kids that are coming out, and, you know, this National Out Day, and he decided that he was going to try it. And he really wasn't young. I mean, he was 22, 23, something like that. Well, anyway, he told them this, and he was beaten up. And he ended up in the street, and because of what the issue was, there weren't too many people who were sympathetic to him in the community. And by the time I had met him, he was living a transgender life, and he was just telling me, we bumped into each other, and he says, look, you know, I never thought I would be this way, but I ended up getting into prostitution because that's the only way I could take care of myself. And I just kept going this way. It's not at all what I had intended. And we never got to really talk enough to find out what exactly
because,
he had freedom.
Right, that's tough because neither gender nor sexuality is subject to intent, really.
But in his case, he just continued to go in that manner because.
Well, yeah, and the same thing happened. The same thing happened with the young woman in Ohio. She said, "Okay, well, mommy and daddy don't want me to be trans. I'll come out as gay."
Yeah.
And that just breaks your heart into a million pieces. And all of this, gay, straight, trans, questioning, whatever, you know, points to the very, very fragile and delicate experience that is adolescence. There's probably no more confusing time in the human experience. And it seems that in all of those realms, we are ill-equipped to deal with any of it. Let me check in real quick. Wait, Angry. Let me check in. Got to check in with Carol Abel.
Hey, happy 2015, everybody.
Yes. Please foresee the future for us. Lottery numbers would be nice since you're already there.
Yeah. 42. And it's a hot one down here already today, so it's really kind of vicariously delicious to hear everybody talking about cold weather.
Yeah, delicious to you.
You're in Australia, right, Carol?
Right on the border of Queensland and New South Wales.
That's right, yeah. So it's warm where you are?
Very warm.
Very warm.
You know what I'm doing tonight? I'm running a race at midnight. In the freezing cold.
Oh, that's the right way to do it. Where's the race?
In Portland, Oregon, over bridges. I decided to challenge myself, me and a bunch of other women in their 50s.
Cool. Enjoy it.
We will be sitting by cheering you on. There used to be a comic strip many years ago called Tumbleweeds, and I loved it. And there was yes, it was just full of really nasty stereotypes, but the writing was cute. And there was a young brave named Limpid Lizard, who was very, very cultured. And one day, there's a panel that shows the chief coming up to him and saying, you know, "Limpid Lizard, while the other braves are out hunting and chasing buffalo and feeding the tribe, you sit there on the lounge deck of your teepee." drinking martinis. And Limpid Lizard merely looked up and said, "Bully for them. I'm glad they're making good use of their time also." So, you know, we will all sit and cheer you on,
Alex. Thanks.
Emphasis on the word sit.
Yeah, and I wish I could hold a big sign up saying I'm running for peace and justice, or, you know, imprison the war criminals or something.
You know, just wear a shirt that says I can't breathe.
Yeah.
And I'm not being I'm not being facetious. I mean, that's
you know what? I'm going to do that, and I'm going to make that shirt, and I'm going to have someone take a picture of me with that and put it on Facebook.
Very good. I believe it's a statement that deserves to be made, because, you know, the right wing is so inflamed now. You know, well, they banned a boys' basketball team from competing in a tournament for wearing I can't breathe warm-up shirts. The girls' basketball team in the same tournament said, the boys said, "Well, all right, we'll take the shirts off." The girls' basketball team said, "Screw you, we just won't play."
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Let's see. Welcome, Roger.
Sorry about the slow response. I had to unmute.
That's okay.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Yeah. Okay. I wanted to make sure that we, Barbie, are you there, Barbie? Some nights the front porch conversation gets rolling real fast, and it's easy to just sort of let...
Nope. She's there. I don't know if she can unmute or if she can even talk right now. She was listening to the conversation and getting a little teary.
Oh.
She has a grandson with an issue.
Well, Bob, if you're looking for someone to hold forth, you know that I'm a serious motor mouth, but I'm trying to restrain myself, so I shall.
Okay.
We haven't heard from Tim.
Can I throw something out real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
I promise it won't take long.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, I would like to just get out to everyone listening. The viewer-funded Horn desperately needs contributions. Well, I'm going to be a pitch man for this. You know, if you haven't given in a while, please do. This is a unique...
Did we disconnect?
What? Bob?
I don't know. It sounds like it.
I'm here. I hear you, Sparky.
Okay. Okay.
I just wondered if maybe Gerald was having a problem.
Everybody dropped out for a quick moment.
Yeah. I'm here.
Oh, because I'm here. I was just listening to Gerald mention keeping you going. I just want to mention a thanks to all the Horn family. For the last 2 months, Bob hasn't had to pull the pin on my challenge.
That's true, and you've had plenty of challenges of your own to deal with, and I really appreciate that. And, you know, one of the things outside the ordinary course of the news, hey, Bill?
Yeah.
Bill, I just wanted to check in and see if there was anything that was particularly lighting you up, simply because I've had a couple of blinks in on the gizmo line, and I wanted to make sure that
I'll just talk to Angry for a minute. You were so correct about Germany and what happened to them financially. My mother's mother went back to visit in 27, and he literally had to have a bushel basket of money to buy a loaf of bread. Inflation was so bad, and that is an open invitation. And how the hell they ever got an Austrian to run, because that's what Hitler was. He was not a... You know, he lived in Vienna for years. Anyway, I'll open this line for somebody else. You folks have the best possible New Year and take it easy. This is the first, man, I worked so many of those damn New Year's Eve that it was a drag. There was nothing like watching a whole room full of people throwing up at 1 o'clock in the morning, you know? Anyway, you take care of yourself.
Happy birthday, Bill. Happy birthday indeed.
Happy birthday, man.
Happy birthday.
So the Gizmo line's open for anybody that wants to jump in on it. 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. Let's see. Hey, Gerald, did we ever get you back? Okay, I just
I didn't know I was gone. Did it not get out?
Yeah, you were calling on folks to help out, and then you just disappeared.
Oh, well, no, I just, you know, hey, you know, I just want to get that out there. If you can contribute, please do. And if not, you know, don't put yourself in a bind, obviously. But, you know, if you've got an extra 5, 10, 20 bucks, throw it the horns way, because, you know, it'd be nice to start the year on a positive note.
And
that's basically all I had to say. I thought you might go into the gold, buy gold thing, but, you know.
No. Well,
I kind of like it, Bob. I'd like to hear it. I'm just kidding.
No, please don't make me. that was one thing I would like to open up to the group outside of, you know, because we spend a lot of time talking about really, really serious issues. But I like Sparky did a moment ago, and it's 26 minutes past the hour, so we got about 33 minutes of conversation remaining in the program. I want to make sure, because, you know, even though years beginning and years ending are arbitrary in nature, it is appropriate at a time like this to thank everyone for keeping all of this going, because you have. I haven't kept this going. You have. The horn would not exist if there was not a perceived need, a desire for it to exist. I don't see a day when this will ever exist as some sort of podcast of me just filibobstering for 3 hours into a microphone. If y'all aren't there, I'm not going to be here, okay, because it's pointless. It is the interchange of ideas. You know, there's an operative philosophy out there that says that the person behind the microphone is running the show, and that y'all are there to listen to me set forth some sort of received wisdom. And all I got to do is tune in the for-profit media, and I figure out pretty quick what a great big steaming load of crap that is. The real expertise resides in the people who live lives in this country, not in people who are paid six-figure salaries to tell people how to live them, whether they be pastor, brother, minister, father, whatevers, or whether they be for-profit media millionaires. There's information that can be brought to bear, but in many instances, that's information that people are going to find for themselves. And so this will never be a vehicle, and ultimately, profit-driven broadcasting is broadcasting that is a placeholder for the spots where they drop the commercials. All profit-driven broadcasting is broadcasting for the purpose of creating a life support system for ads. That's why there's a million channels and nothing on TV now, because everything is so niched out that, you know, if you go to the hunting channel, maybe you'll have ads for the new high powered round from Remington, or if you go to the pastry baking channel, there'll be an ad for a new titanium pastry nozzle. That's never going to happen here. And I would love to see the horn, and we've experienced growth in the last year, and I'm really happy for that, because that means more people are participating in the conversation, and I would like for it to continue to grow. But most of all, I think beyond expressing a deep and abiding and humbling sense of respect and gratitude for everybody who makes this what it is, I also want to ask the question: is it what you want it to be? Is there something more you would like for it to be? I mean, I've mentioned in the past, I'd seen phone calls come in on Bill's, on the line that Bill was on, and so I wanted to open it up to anybody who wanted to jump in as well. But, you know, for instance, there's that question of, you know, do we want to bring another Gizmo line on? You know, Gizmo 1 and Gizmo 2. We can do that. But the larger question is, what do you want the horn to be? What do you want the community to be? How do you see it going forward? And if you don't mind, Carol, your thoughts.
About what I'd like it to be?
Yeah.
I actually like what it is that you do because it's different from anything that I've ever seen done. I get so much of the talk radio where they try to pit one side against the other. And that was the problem that I had in co-hosting because my co-host insisted that there were two sides to everything. But in actuality, sometimes there are five sides to things, and sometimes there really is only one side to things. And I don't believe in sitting and arguing for the sake of arguing. And so it was such a pleasure to be able to come here and to hear a truly progressive voice, to become a part of a community with truly progressive people who understand the greater good in all of this. And it's like the conversation that we were having earlier. Yes, resources are finite. Decency is not finite. We can have decency for everybody. Empathy is not finite. We can have empathy for everybody. Respect is not finite. We can have respect for everybody if they deserve it. And by deserve it, we mean have a breath. Because we do respect human beings here. I get that we poke a lot of fun at some truly unbelievably idiotic people. But in the end, I don't think any of us ever forget that they're human beings. And that's one of the things that I appreciate about this. So, do I want to change it? No. Am I dragging people kicking and screaming here? Absolutely, because I think what you do is really important.
What we do, Carol, so, what we do.
Well, yes, and there are a lot of us that are involved in it and wanting to make it work. So, yeah, when I get a little spare change, you get it, buddy.
You really are dragging people to the horns, kicking and screaming?
Only the first time. After they've been here, they like it.
She's a giver, Sparky.
Even if sometimes it means the giving of, you know, a swift kick to the tuchus to, you know, get them moving. Exactly. Anybody else jump in on the concept? And this is not me fishing for compliments. For God's sakes, please understand that's not what it is.
But I just, you know, that was the point I think I was really trying to make to that gentleman earlier, was that having enough empathy for people who are hurting on both sides of an issue is not a mutually exclusive thing. It doesn't have to be a mutually exclusive thing. And if you're playing it so black and white, then the problem is not me. I am not the reason we can't have nice things, goddammit.
I'm catching some feedback coming from somewhere.
Alex.
It's me?
Okay. Yes. You got to keep your mic muted when you're not talking.
There you go. And that fixed it.
Well, you know,
anyway.
I say these things because Dr. Bill and I were talking, and Horst called in earlier today to talk to Dr. Bill. Dr. Bill just finished the first full year of the virtual center. The second anniversary will come in March. Rick Smith has been a vital part of the horn for a very long time now. And I love this particular format, this group discussion. I think of the for-profit media versions of it, like the McLaughlin group or, you know, whoever's screaming at each other on Fox. And I'm sick of it. I'm all for conversation. I'm all for discussion, but it has to be, it has to be done in good faith. And, since the late 90s, I guess, or maybe before that. Maybe it goes all the way back to the first incarnation of Crossfire on CNN. People screaming at each other has become an entertainment, and I'm sick of it. I did it for a year and a half.
I think of anything else that goes on in the Coliseum.
Right, exactly.
Bob, you remember how we got this thing started? You asked me and everybody in the Horn Malloy Skype group after Malloy several nights he wanted to do this, and then we decided on that New Year's Eve thing.
Right.
We had 22 people in the group. I was maxed out. I couldn't get any more people in. And it was the most enjoyable New Year's Eve I've ever had. And then we started Friday on the front porch.
Well, we had attempted a variation on it back when we had the Comrex box and full functionality there, because we could have me and four phone calls. But that wound up being a little bit dodgy because it was two per channel and you could, well, this works out a lot more nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I don't know that I can do more than three hours a night, but, you know, if there's more to be done, just remember, this is an ongoing experiment, and we can try different stuff because there aren't any suits upstairs at the network saying, "No, by God, you're fired," and that door is always open. I will say again, because I was hoping to have it done by now, but we didn't. I really, really do have a long-term goal of sooner rather than later doing a Kickstarter campaign to carry us for the next several years in terms of equipment, in terms of broadcast space, and in terms of, I mean, for instance, because we had a discussion about this one night after hours in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. I'd love to have the bandwidth to be able to send this program simultaneously to the Horn stream and all its permutations, as well as set up a YouTube channel and make it a live broadcast on YouTube.
Hey, Bob?
Yeah.
I got company that just comes, so I got to drop off. I'll leave this thing going, but
okay, yeah,
I'm not going to be here.
Okay, standing by. But, you know, would that be cool? I mean, and, you know, maybe if suddenly this thing gets bigger and bigger and bigger, then, you know, we expand to 4 hours or expand to 5 hours. We can do that. We can do that.
Well, I think it'd be awesome.
Yeah, I think it'd be great. The one thing I wanted to add about the way it is now, and, you know, I'm a relative newcomer. I've only been around a few months, but these are real people here. These aren't suits that are getting paid to say what they're supposed to say on a national or on a cable news channel, regardless of which one it is. It doesn't really matter because they're all the same. And, you know, that's important to me, that we get actual real feedback from the world, not someone else's version of it.
Yeah, because I got to tell you, if I could get paid to say anal ease for the first time on this show, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, and now you're working on royalties.
You know, I think the manufacturers are listening in, Bob.
Well, I wish they'd hurry up and call the marketing department. Curiously enough, it's the same number as all the other departments.
Exactly.
Yeah, when are we going to do that? I mean, come on, let's get a brand going. Let's get the Horn brand copyrighted, and let's just get out there and start marketing T-shirts, hats, you know, all that fun stuff.
I think I know why. Because when you get involved with something like that, Bob can correct me if I'm wrong, but when you get into that, when you have sponsors and things like that, then you lose control of what you can do.
Well, you live in constant fear of them. I much prefer a model. I much prefer a model where we've just got a much broader family commune congregation, and can therefore expand our capacity. Because, you know, people come in, people come out, we meet needs for a little while and people drop off, and then new people come in, and it's, you know, it just works that way. But for the most part, everybody knows that this is an absolute free speech zone. With the caveat that right-wingers are not allowed here. Because the first definition of free speech is that it be engaged in, at least in this community, in good faith. And right-wingers never engage in conversation in good faith that I'm aware of. So,
very true.
If this was an expanded community where people were chatting and talking real time on YouTube and chatting and talking real time in the chat room and chatting and talking real time in the Horn Malloy Skype chat room, you know, it would be a multimedia extravaganza in which a whole hell of a lot more people, would be participating. Just had an email here saying, I'd love to sometime send you a dozen horn mugs from Zazzle to be used as premiums. They'd be gone in no time, he says. And you know, that's something, you know, we can set that up on a per print basis, I think, at some of these drop ship establishments. But there's X number of days in hours in the day and days in the week and weeks in the year. And when I say, you know, it's what we do together, you know, it's not me playing Tom Sawyer trying to get somebody else to paint the fence. It's just a matter of what we want to make happen. I mean, when we do the crowd, that's what you said, doo-doo. When we do the crowdfunding campaign, it's gonna need everybody out there social mediaing for all they're worth to get it all over creation, because it's gonna be a big damn deal. It's gonna be really big.
And then we can open a horn store.
Well, yeah, and you know, we've talked down the road. There's this longstanding goal, Carol, of having a horn in, where everybody just gets together in some mutually agreed upon location, and you know, we'll roast things over open fires and drink beers and sweet tea and carry on and cuss and discuss and just have a good old time of it.
Eat and drink things that are bad for us?
You know, I think bad for us is an entirely subjective determination that needs to be considered toward full consensus inside the group, don't you?
Well, I guess it depends on your perspective.
Well, that, you know, high in cholesterol, high in unsaturated fats, you know, pretty much the Appalachian diet.
Well, that's what makes it taste so well, you know.
Exactly. And, you know, that would be Ferg catering the meal.
Hey, it's just a little pill you have to take every day. It's not very big, I promise.
Well, forget that. I'm already on those pills, okay?
Well, I am. Actually, two of them.
Are we going to have a potluck?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on them too. I crush them up and snort them and chew them up for the refreshing burst of flavor.
Exactly. Buying the diabetic medication that I'm on, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it has been a fun, some nights it just feels very grim, but that's because we have grim stuff to deal with, but other nights we can be absolutely shallow and silly and foolish, and I think we've had our fair share of that too, because we spend a lot of time keeping each other sane via the miracle of laughter. Kurt Vonnegut said at the end of his sojourn as what he called sitting up mud, Kurt Vonnegut said, "I'm convinced after all my years that we're all pretty much put here to dance, and I think laughter is a form of dance." It's the dancing you can do while sitting still. So I hope we accomplish that goal. Randy points out, he said, "I think if the horn grew much bigger, it would lose its small group feel." I don't. I think the small group feel is something that we create with the idea of a front porch and a conversation taking place over the back fence and that kind of thing. And there's probably 340 at least broadcast. No, well, yeah, somewhere around, I don't know. Somebody do the math. 52. So there's 300 broadcasts a year, more or less. And that's a lot. And that's a lot of 3-hour segments for anybody to call in who wants to. And people in the chat room and in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. I don't think so. I don't think if we grew that we would lose the operative dynamic that we have here. The cachet, if you will.
Well, Bob, another thing that makes this a wonderful community is the fact that we each bring our own warped sense of humor, because if you look at the political landscape, it's depressing. It is darn depressing. I mean, we could all probably get a wonderful prescription of our favorite antidepressant and, as you say, crush it up and snort it or chew them up for the refreshing burst of flavors. But, this does give us an opportunity to laugh at the morons and, as you eloquently put them, the birther, tenthers, deathers,
birther, birther, deather, tenther, bagger, booger eater, birchers, libertarians, and Republicans.
Yeah. Oh, yes. You.
I've got it memorized.
So much better than I can. Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, you say it so much better than I could ever. But, this program is an oasis of sanity in another otherwise insane world. And it's getting crazier by the day. And I figure...
You're right, because since I started listening to this program, I've been able to totally get off that 50 milligrams of fuck it all I was on every day.
Oh, no, I still take my damadols.
I like my narcotics.
Well, whatever gets you through the day, but I would say after the first Monday in January, we're going to have a whole lot more to laugh about. Morin Monday is going to go to a whole new level.
Oh, yeah, there's a whole lot about 2015 that's got strap in written all over it.
Bob, y'all are going to have an interesting state legislature like we went through 2 years ago with the veto state legislature. See, in Arkansas, it's also a simple majority by the legislature to override a governor's veto.
Lovely.
I think this legislative session in West Virginia is going to be an experiment in poo-flinging in the monkey house. Because every crazy-ass right-wing notion is going to see the light of day in the coming West Virginia legislative session. There are going to be ancient grudges and grievances aired that the Republicans have been sitting on since the Depression.
83 years worth, friend.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, hey, it's like I said last night, it's not going to be all that different. You're going to see some crazy shit, but... The Democrats we've had here in the legislature weren't really Democrats. I mean, let's be real.
No. They've been Republican or Democrats in name only for the longest time.
Yeah, the number in the West Virginia legislature. In the West Virginia legislature, the number of out and out, honest to God, true card carrying progressives can probably be counted. Oh, what, Gerald? One hand or two?
You might get one and part of a hand. It'll be less than 10.
Yeah,
I mean, less than 8.
Yeah. Right.
It'll be less than 8.
There's definitely no toe counting.
Oh, no. No, no. Absolutely not.
That's
but,
the
hey,
same thing.
That's what the electric wanted.
Legislature. Yeah. And you get what you get what you pay for.
Oh, and we're gonna and you know what? We're gonna see things that have never been seen here before. We're gonna have I betcha, and I'll be probably purple in the face with it. We're going to have within the first couple of days of the legislative session, I give it 4 or 5 tops before the first EPA nullification bill is filed.
Oh yeah.
And see,
well,
that'll be interesting because nullification's never really been argued in West Virginia because we were on the right side of that little dust-up in 1861.
Well, the thing about it is you don't really need it. You know, every time that there's a complaint filed with the EPA, correct me if I'm wrong, has, what, 60 days to respond. They usually wait till the 59th day and then respond to it, which kicks the EPA off of it, right? Something similar to that?
Thereabouts.
So, you know, you basically keep the feds out of it just by, you know, business as usual.
But the thing is, these reactionaries, these insurgents, were put in office on the promise that they would do something about Obama's EPA and their job killing. And I give, you know, and I'm going to wait. I promise I'm going to wait a week, and then I'm going to write an op-ed and submit it to the Gazette, and ask the new majority, where's the new coal?
Well, something is kind of off topic of that, but similarly related. See, that's what happens when I try to talk too fast. Anyway, riding in the car the other day, a local radio station here in the capital city, Americans for Prosperity, you know, the Koch brothers are still spending money because I hear these commercials all about workplace rights and the new legislature is going to do this and do that. So, you know, they're still spending money here. So look out.
Oh, yeah, they're not done by a long shot.
Can I say hi to everybody?
You can say hi. Yes, absolutely.
It's Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Just wanted to say hi to everybody.
Hi.
Hi, Barbie. And I'm glad you did. I wasn't trying to avoid you. Your dear sister said that you were muted up at one point.
I had to.
Oh, and I saw a lovely photograph of you and your sister the other day.
I think it's my favorite. That's the one where I have my hand on my heart.
Yes.
Yep.
Here, let me check, make sure.
That's the one.
I've got a near photographic memory, but I just wanted to make
I
sure.
Love that. I love that.
I thought it was absolutely charming.
Changes the meaning of big sister, little sister, though.
Oh, you just bring out the best in me, though.
I look like a moose standing behind you.
Now stop that. I'm the moose.
It's your heart. Honey, it's what's in your heart.
She's tiny. There's this little tiny midget standing in front of me that looks like me.
But I'm mighty.
Micah, you know, you mentioned moose, and I immediately transitioned to the credits to Monty Python and the Holy Grail. You know, my cousin had a moose one time. By the way, I loved the photographs, Carol, of Cat Stevens out walking on the water. I was thinking we might want to. Because it doesn't look like ice, and I'm thinking it looks a hell of a lot like there's a new religion in the offing.
Jesus Kitty?
How would Cat Stevens like to be the central focus of a new faith?
He would love that. Anything where he's the center of attention and people worship him, he's good with it, really.
Oh.
If
you could just get him to answer his emails.
Yeah.
Well, he does have a Facebook page.
He does.
I need to go friend up with Cat.
I thought he converted to Islam.
Well, we had to change his name to... His name was Yusuf Islam, but we had to change it to Cat Stevens to get him off the no-fly list.
Because that, yeah, that even extends to kitty carriers in the hold of the aircraft.
Is that one of them their Muslin cats?
Oh, God.
Well, we'll get death threats now. That's going to be fun.
That's actually a moose limb. Is it two syllables?
Yes. Moose limb.
Indeed. Right. No. I didn't realize that it looked like he was walking on the water until somebody asked if that was Jesus Kitty on my Facebook page.
No, I think there's a whole new meme. I mean, never mind Grumpy Cat. I think there's a whole new meme of Jesus Kitty says that would work huge in the probably in the not particularly faithful community.
Jesus Cat is watching you.
Well, tomorrow morning, trust me, he'll be right back out there, so I'll get some good shots.
And you'll be yelling at him again.
I'm sorry. You wanted me to mute. I wanted to say Happy New Year to everybody. I just got in. I hope Roger got in on the call, too. He was trying.
Didn't see Roger get in yet. I did see him call, but I couldn't do anything about it.
Well, you know, I guess I could.
We'll be on later after Malloy, Larry.
Oh, and okay. Hey, by the way, Carol, you have a new, you have an early convert. Writing with marvelous coherence from Kansasstan.
Diane
notes, I'm into worshiping Cat Stevens or any other cat for that matter.
Oh, well. He sends autographed cards for just $19.95.
And
I'd like to have a conversation with Diane about her class. Anyway, what she teaches. Anyway, okay, thank you, Dunk. Thank you for adding me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for coming and running back, Sparky. I appreciate it.
Well, I was just taking a break. They're settling in. I have a cat in the house tonight named Scrapper.
He sounds like a tough customer.
Well, he loves this house, believe me. He's been walking around checking out the new hardwood floor. The hardwood floors go, where'd the carpeting go?
Yeah, and you know, that delightful thing with the claws and the carpet, that's all gone now, right?
Yeah, well, for him, in this house, he can go, there's some throw rugs, and he can go check out the throw in front of the fireplace insert. He loves that. But my stepson and his wife just got here a few minutes ago. So that's what I've been doing.
Just remember one of those undeniable facts of life. Cats don't come with breaks.
It's our Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's all roll into one.
Well, we have reached that time, one and all. Thank you for participating in what I thought was a rousing, Jim Dandy, good front porch conversation this here Wednesday, New Year's Eve. Malloy will be live for all 3 hours this evening, so I wish to all of you a very, very happy New Year. Jim just sent an email wishing a very happy New Year to Scrapper and Cat Stevens from the cats over at Shea Jim. Seriously, I hope your New Year, even though it's an arbitrary number and an arbitrary designation, is a happy one, and is let's go forward with great hopes of prosperousness into 2015, shall we? Thanks always go out to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the Horn chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you to John Fox. Happy New Year, John Fox, in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you, one and all, for all the support you give that keeps the horn going. It is you, and no one but you, who makes it possible for this conversation to continue. And for that, I am deeply humbled and grateful and inspired. And, of course, thanks to always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACACT, A-C-H-E-A-C-T, .org. And, yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Happy New Year, everybody.